I Love a Mystery, transcribed.
Well, this is February 1971, and this is the day of the earthquake here in Los Angeles, and also the touchdown of the astronauts on their third moonwalk. And this is Gary Williams sitting in the home of Mr. Russell Thorson, better known as Jack Packard. Not better known, but also known as Jack Packard on the Isle of a Mystery radio series. Hello, Russ.
How are you, Gary?
Real fine. I'm real glad to be talking with you today. It's quite a day, isn't it?
Oh, God, this is a day and a half.
Just a moment ago, before we turned the tape on, we felt the last rumble of a lot of rumbles today. We both got really shook up at 6 a.m. Russ here lives in Studio City, way up on the mountaintop, and I'm out in Van Nuys. And we had an appointment to sit down and talk on tape today, and through earthquakes and wind and rain, the show must go on. How's everything going, Russ?
Well, fine. I must confess I'm a little shook up today because this is not... There's got to be a better way of starting the day than having an earthquake, you know, to wake you up.
Yeah, you suggested that I shouldn't bring my birthday in with such a big bang in celebration. I wanted to sort of ask you some questions about the old days of radio. I Love a Mystery is my very favorite radio show among the many great radio shows of yesteryear, dramatic type, that I collect on tape now. Of course, they've been off the air for 15 or 20 years, but few collectors like myself have dug up thousands of these shows through a lot of hard effort and hard money and different things like that. And I'm just down in Los Angeles for 2 or 3 months this winter, and so I've had the wonderful opportunity to visit with both you and Jim Bowles, the fellow that played Doc Long in the series of I Love a Mystery. Do you ever think about the old radio days, Russ?
Oh, yes, so often, because that was a wonderful life. Now they've got television. That's a pretty rough deal. You work an awful lot harder in television than you ever did in radio. And one thing I do miss about radio, I suppose maybe it's just because I'm getting a little older, but we had NBC and CBS and Mutual. And you'd be at those places, one or the other of them, every day. You met the same group of people. You worked with the same group. You became a very nicely well-knit group. You know, you had lunch with them every day. Now I never see anybody anymore because the television studios are spread all over town, and once in a while I'll run into John McIntyre or Sam Edwards or Jim Bowles or some of the men that I used to work with, men and the gals I used to work with years ago in radio, but you've lost touch with that group now completely. Mm-hmm. They're gone. Not gone, but just spread out. And this is such a tremendous area here in Los Angeles that your social life is a little bit limited, too. You know, if they live here in Studio City or Van Nuys or Sherman Oaks, we see them. But if they live in Inglewood or Woodland Hills or something, well, you just don't take the trouble to stay in touch with people like you used to.
I understand. I suppose you're going to renew one old acquaintance from what you told me. You have a part coming up on the Odd Couple, isn't that right?
Yes.
And, of course, Tony Randall played the third hero in the I Love a Mystery series featuring Jack, Doc, and Reggie. And I don't think I clarified that, but Jim Bowles was Doc Long, and Russell Thorson, you played Jack Packard, and Tony Randall played Reggie York in the last series from New York from 1949 to 52. So you keep pretty busy with TV and movie parts and things, don't you, Russ?
Oh, yes, yes, it's been good. The movie industry's kind of falling apart, they tell me, but television is holding up pretty well, and maybe we'll even have radio back, color radio, possibly, one of these days.
Well, you know, there are a few stations around the country that have brought back these old radio programs, and they're being sponsored on a local basis. And they're running The Lone Ranger and Sherlock Holmes and Orson Welles' series The Black Museum. A few of these shows are being heard right now around the country. And they've tried very hard to bring back Lum and Abner on a widespread basis all around the country and trying to sell the packages to sponsors. I know there are many, many people who love old radio like I do. I've also always been a great movie fan, and I like some of the TV shows, but there's just something about old-time radio, the imagination, the pictures you'd paint with the imagination. I think, really, we lost a lot in losing dramatic radio. Don't you think so, Russ?
Oh, I think so. I think it was a tremendous loss, and the thing that is still sort of a shock to me is the rapidity with which it disappeared. Suddenly there was daytime radio and nighttime radio, variety shows, comedy shows, dramatic shows, and within a space of a couple of years, everything was gone. I think I did the last dramatic show to come out of Hollywood on CBS, a series called Johnny Dollar.
Right. That was
and I believe I made the very last show that was made.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of the last shows that were on, of Johnny Dollar, and the other two series that went off at the same time. Suspense went off just before that, in the last part of 1961. I have the last show of that one. And Escape. Do you remember that show at all with William Conrad?
Yeah.
Real fine show. And the trouble is, I think, during this period of the late 50s and early 60s, during the last part of old-time radio, and not too many people were listening because TV was coming in so big and strong. But I know a lot of people would really enjoy hearing these old dramatic radio shows again, and we collectors are having a ball digging them up. And one of the things I'm really looking forward to is getting the opportunity, through you and your wife, to supply tapes to the Braille Institute for the Blind here in Los Angeles. Tell us a little bit about the Braille Institute, would you, Russ?
Well, Gary, I think if you can, and I know you're going to help us out on this, it's one of the nicest things that you could possibly do. Both my wife and I have been associated in a minor way with the Braille Institute. She's been reading for a history student at USC down there, and I had a class in old radio there this last summer. And I found out in the course of my 10 or 12 weeks down there that these older people, and most of them at Braille are of the older generation, miss radio tremendously. I've been in it practically all my life, but still they taught me things about and told me things about radio that I had completely forgotten or never knew. They really have a tremendous knowledge of it, and Gary has agreed to tape, at least to start in with, 100 shows, which we are going to give to Braille as a part of what we hope will be a good and a permanent library, so these people, these handicapped people, can simply pick up a show from the library and run it through their tape machine and listen to it. And I know from the enthusiastic response I had with this class this last summer that nothing would delight them more. As a matter of fact, it's been a little frustrating because when I suggested the idea to them, they jumped on it and apparently thought I was going to accomplish the thing overnight, which is impossible. My phone was ringing three or four times a day from members of this class saying,
right.
How are we coming on the records? Well, it's taken a little time, but finally we've got Gary here, bless his heart, who's going to supply us with the first 100.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I guess maybe a fellow doesn't find too many opportunities in life to do something he really thinks is worthwhile. And, well, we were discussing this the other day. I know there are several fellows around the country that have large collections of old-time radio shows. They're the ones that started out digging them up originally. And most of them just maybe they've gotten saturated. I don't know with trading and everything, but it's hard to get them to dub things off for you. And some of the newer collectors are very enthusiastic, but they don't have the material. And this is the thing. I'm sort of in the same boat. I got up to trading with 30 different people through the mail at one time. Old radio shows. Those that had taken them off at the time on wire recorder and saved them. Or those that had dug up the original discs. But I've dropped it all. I just don't trade anymore with anybody because of time and expense and everything like this. But on a circumstance like this for the Braille Institute, I'm more than glad to get a chance to to copy my shows off. Like I said, I've got many, many, many hundreds of the shows, and at least a representative of practically every radio show there was back in the old days. Now, everybody's taste is a little different. I sort of lean toward the adventure and mystery type. Suspense, Inner Sanctum, Gangbusters, I Love a Mystery, these type of shows. The ones I think I have an outstanding collection on are the shows like Suspense and over 100 Gunsmokes, the Radio Gunsmoke, which was a real fine radio show. Do you remember that one?
Bill Conrad again.
Right, William Conrad.
Well, I must tell you something funny about Bill, because I've known him for so many years, and like the rest of us, he broke in radio. And he has become, in recent years, a director and producer. He was at Warner Brothers for years. Well, Bill had a funny idea. When he cast his motion pictures, I think I've done five of them for him, he would simply gather his old radio friends around. They'd been the,
is that
in
right?
The motion pictures. Oh, yes. John McIntyre, myself, Virginia Gregg, Stacy Harris, all the people that he used to work with in radio, he would immediately cast in his pictures. So he's surrounded by all these familiar faces.
Well, as I mentioned before, I Love a Mystery is my favorite show, but it was a continued series. And among the shows that were complete in 1 half hour, which was a standard format, my very favorite two shows for listening, just flat good listening, were the two that William Conrad starred in, Escape and Gunsmoke. And I just do everything I can to collect all of these shows that I can, because they were always good, real high quality, and in well-written, well-acted, and well-produced dramatic radio shows. Again, I think the trouble with them was that they were on, like, from around 1949 to 61 or 62, and this was the time when TV was getting such a foothold. All the sponsors, I believe, were taking their money out of radio and putting it in TV. Was that the big trouble?
That was the big trouble. They took their money out of radio and advertising and put it into television advertising, just as now the the cigarette manufacturers are no longer having television commercials being shown, so they're putting it, I read at least, into magazine and newspaper advertising. They're just shifting their medium is all.
Say, let's get right down to what they call the nitty-gritty about I Love a Mystery, if you don't mind. I have a lot of the old original shows that you and the gang did from the 49 to 52 series. Now, I have several that are complete and in very, very good sound, listening sound. I have the Faith, Hope, and Charity story complete, and except for a few chapters, I have all of Temple of Vampires and Battle of the Century, and I've got all of Bury Your Dead, Arizona, The Richard's Curse, so many like that. And then I have miscellaneous chapters from a lot of other programs that you did. I think you mentioned you liked the story in Temple of Vampires.
Oh, yes. That was absolutely my favorite by all odds. By all odds.
I agree with you on that. I also remember one other one, right along with that one, that I like so much, which was The Pirate Loot of the Island of Skulls. Are there some shows, maybe that one and some others, that you didn't do since you were only on the air with your series 3 years as opposed to the 5 years of the first series? What would you think about that?
Oh, yes, there was some. Carlton and Morris, of course, had to adapt the old scripts. The changes of things. I mean, just for a little example, they spoke once of Jack flying a plane at something like 165 miles an hour. Well, in 1952, that was a little ridiculous. So he had to do a lot of rewriting. And I don't know, but I just have a feeling that the scripts that the series that he picked for us to do back in New York were the ones that required the least rewriting on them, because he was at that time involved in writing, producing, and directing One Man's Family on television. That took an awful lot of time and effort. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have the time to devote to it. So there are probably some of the series that he would like to have had on the air, and some that we would have liked to do that we didn't do, simply because it would have taken a major rewriting job. Mm-hmm. But we did do the vampire thing, and we did Bury Your Dead, Arizona. I don't know whether we did Faith, Hope, and Charity or not.
Oh, yes, definitely. I have the complete show on that.
Incidentally, there have been two or three efforts, to make a television version of
I read about that mystery.
The last one I heard was Faith, Hope, and Charity. But they had made a comedy show out of it.
Oh, no.
And I thought it, I listened to it, I didn't see it. But I heard some of the voices from the thing when in the dubbing room down at Universal one day. Oh, this was several years ago. And I thought it was awful. Just awful.
I can imagine. I read somewhere that, I've got a tape interview with Carlton Morrison, Michael Raffetto, who played the original Jack, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Where he talks about this show coming out. Is this the one with Ida Lupino that she was supposed to have been in?
No.
No, this is a different one yet.
Separate one, yeah.
He was telling that one of them is made out of sort of a beatnik or something like that and all of this. Now, this really is a commentary to me on the modern world and the way they do things. I don't know. I'll tell you one of the things I really love about old radio. I can even listen to the commercials, and I do not mind the commercials on old radio, unlike TV. When I'm up home, up in Washington State, I've got a little commercial killer, that's what I call it, right next to me, and I click them off. Because I can't, they make me actually nervous, if not violent, to listen to these stupid commercials. On radio, though, they were very intelligent. You have announcers say, and now the Signal Oil program, the Whistler, you can go farther with Signal. Now back to our story. You never minded that a bit. I've never heard what I'd call an insulting commercial or a stupid commercial on any of the old radio shows, except in the very last part, in 1661. The suspense shows had the big silly singing commercial like TV had, because it was getting into this modern era. So I don't know. I just don't find the enjoyment or the sincerity in the shows like I of today as much as I do the old shows of yesteryear. At least this is how I feel, and this is from the shoulder. One of the reasons I really respect old-time radio.
Well, I think I certainly agree with you on this commercial aspect of the thing. But as you say, in the last few years of radio broadcasting, you found more and more of the, well, what the people in the industry used to call the fear commercial. In other words, if you don't use our toothpaste, your teeth are going to fall out, you know. If you don't use our gasoline, your car is going to break down on the freeway and you're going to be in trouble.
That's a good term, the fear commercial.
Yes, it tried to implant the idea in a person's mind that if you don't use this product, you're going to be in trouble, which the early days of radio, they never suggested at all. They might say that if you eat this cereal, why, you're going to feel good like that. But
you won't die if you don't.
No, you won't die if you don't eat this particular cereal. But there's a good chance it might make you feel better.
Listen, I want to ask you a few questions about your life and career. Where are you from, Russ, and when did you start acting?
Oh, originally from, I was born in Wisconsin. And I moved to Montana when I was quite a young kid. Finished high school and college there, graduated from the University of Montana. And did a lot of theater work there, and then went back to the University of Iowa. And I took a master's degree there in Iowa, and I was going to be a teacher in drama. Well, if any of you are old enough to remember the very early 30s, you know what it was like. We had a real depression in those days, so I get out of college all armed with my master's degree, and I can't get a job anywhere. So I come back to Montana and get a job on a radio station there. And I worked for a while on the radio station there, and then I got a chance to go to work on a bigger radio station in Ogden, Utah, and also be an associate director of their very fine little theater there, which they had. And after a couple of years, I just took the bull by the horns and decided to try New York and break into radio, and I did. I managed it all right and got jobs, and then I won an audition to do the role of Tom Mix, which I did for 3 years in Chicago.
This before Curly Bradley took it over?
That was before. Curly Bradley was then a part of the Ranch Boys. He and Shorty Carson and Jack Ross were the Ranch Boys, and Curly also played Pecos, mm-hmm. one of the characters on the thing. And then the show was canceled in 1941 when the war came along, and I came out here to the coast. My wife and I came out here to the coast, and when the show went back on the air, why, Curly Bradley came back in as Tom Mix. I stopped off in Chicago one day on my way back to New York some years ago, and went up to the, they were doing it over the Mutual Broadcasting System then, and saw Curly and quite a few of the other guys that had worked with us and Tom Mix there.
How did the I Love a Mystery come about?
Well, we came out here, and we went to San Francisco. And we were both tired because we'd been both working very hard in Chicago, and I knew I was going into the Army. And we wrote a couple of mystery novels. And then I got involved a little bit in radio up there in San Francisco, a show called Dr. Kate. And Hal Burdick and his wife, who wrote and Mrs. Burdick played Dr. Kate, became very good friends of ours. And Hal is still to this day, I think, the best friend I have. And he had a party one night at his home in Palo Alto. Carlton Morse was there. He and Hal had been newspaper men together in San Francisco in the early days. So I met Carlton Morse and talked to him, and he said, you know, eventually things are just going to die out here in San Francisco. And if you come down to Hollywood, why, look me up. So we came down to Hollywood, and I looked him up, and I went to work for him. And I stayed with One Man's Family for, well, from that time on, 1945, till it went off the air. I think it was about in 61 or 62. It started in San Francisco, and then they moved down here to Hollywood. I think it was 1937. But I was working not in the character of Paul Barber, which I later did, but as a character called Gregory Lusk, who was a heavy on the show. And then the word came that they were going to go back to New York with the original radio cast and do it for 13 weeks back in New York on live television. And I had gone back to Wisconsin to visit my family, and I got home one morning, and it was on a Saturday morning. My wife met me at the station, and on the way home, she said, call Carlton Morse immediately. He's been after you. So I got home and called Carlton, and he said, don't unpack your bag. You're going back to New York. Because Raffetto had refused to go. He didn't think he was right for the part. Hmm. So he wouldn't go. So I went back to do Paul Barber on One Man's Family. And we'd been there only for a couple of months, and I was having lunch with Carlton in the restaurant there in Radio City, and he was called to the telephone. And when he came back, he sat down, and he said, do you want to do I Love a Mystery on radio? And I said, sure. And he said, okay, you're Jack Packard. And so we then started like doing... Well, Mike Raffetto had done both Paul Barber and Jack Packard, so he thought, well, if Russ Thorson can do Paul Barber, he can also do Jack Packard. So that's the way it was. And then they had regular auditions and got Tony Randall and Jim Bowles for the other two characters.
Well, that's very, very interesting. I appreciate the in-depth story there and all the details on it. You, how did you do a show, basically and briefly? Did you just rehearse it a few times, go on the air, and any mistakes stay on? I mean, you couldn't erase it, and you didn't do it on tape then? Or
no, no, you couldn't in those days. It was simply live radio, and if you fluffed, why, you fluffed. But in the main... most of the people were pretty experienced. There were very, very few errors made in the course. One of the difficulties was always in the timing, because it had to be very precise. I mean, you were on the air for 14 minutes and 25 seconds or something, and it had to be 14 minutes and 25 seconds. There was no running over on the thing. You couldn't edit out any portions that you wanted. But an I Love a Mystery, we'd... We had about an hour and 15-minute rehearsal. Actually, we'd read it over once... And then, if there were any cuts necessary, the director, of course, took a timing. Then we'd have a dress rehearsal. And if any more cuts or additions were made, why, he would make them. And then when we'd go on the air, that was it. We used to, we did something there one summer in New York with I Love a Mystery. We all wanted a vacation. And so that meant we were going to have to tape a lot of shows or record a lot of shows in advance, you know. And Carlton wasn't directing him then. He only directed him for a short while. And I've forgotten the young man who was directing him. But we came in one day, and I think we did 14 shows, and we didn't rehearse a single one of them. We just took them right as is, just read them right off the page. They turned out fine and dandy.
Oh, brother. Well, I'm one that can really appreciate that, because I've dug up about 40 original old radio scripts from... Well, Suspense and Escape and Lux Theater, different shows like that. And I've tried to produce my own at home, doing the sound effects, doing all the different voices and all of this. And I think I've got a pretty good result out of them. But, oh, the time and effort I had to put in, and so many times I had to stop and rechange scenes, put in a new for a whole new scene and a new setting, or fluffing lines, this type of thing. So I did it with a lot of editing. Tape is a beautiful thing for this. But back in your day, it was whole hog or none, right?
Absolutely. Oh, there were some beauties made on television in those days. I remember one of the first Tom Mix shows I ever did when I came out to Chicago. We had a couple of heavies. It was a very fast-paced scene. We had two heavies that Tom and Pegas were going after named Gila and Weasel. I'll never forget this. I think I called them everything but diesel engines. I couldn't get Gila and Weasel. I was simply all over the place.
I've had this happen so many times. I used to be a disc jockey, an announcer on radio. I did this for several years, and I always figured I could have made my own album of bloopers just on the stuff that I pulled off accidentally on radio.
Well, television has had some beauties, too. We had one on One Man's Family that actually got national publicity on the thing.
Is that right?
Yes, it was a scene on an airplane between Claudia and Claudia's father-in-law. The old man who used to play Papa David on Life Can Be Beautiful was playing the part. And here they're 15,000 feet up in an airplane, and he forgot his lines. So, not knowing what to do, he simply said, "Excuse me, my dear, I get off here."
Oh, brother. When I first talked to you the other day, I was astounded the first words you said, because the voice is exactly like Jack Packard on radio on the I Love a Mystery series 20 years ago or so. Unlike Doc, you know, or Jim Bowles, he has to affect that wonderful dialect he does of the Texan. Your voice sounds just the same. And I was telling you that Jim Bowles the other day was congenial enough to sit down and do a little acting bit from Bury Your Dead, Arizona. Now, I wondered if we switched parts, if we could just close off our little talk here on tape with a little bit of dialogue of the same lines from Bury Your Dead, Arizona. Now, I know you don't have to change your voice anyhow, and I don't know if I can do Doc, but you willing to give her a try?
Why, sure.
All right, good. This is a little short scene from Bury Your Dead, Arizona, and we'll close off with this. I do want to say many, many thanks, Russell Thorson, for talking with me today. I'll really treasure this tape.
You're most welcome.
Good luck. Okay, let's have our little scene now.
Well, Doc, you see what you got us into.
Well, now, Jack, you couldn't hardly say it was all my fault.
I could hardly say it was your fault.
Well, sure, I reckon you could say it, all right.
You know as well as I do the police are looking for us.
Yeah, I knew.
And you knew if they found us, they intended on holding us as material witnesses in the Martin murder case.
Well, yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, doggone it, Jack.
You have to get yourself mixed up in a drifting poker game.
But I was bored.
So you were bored.
That's right, I was bored.
So what do you do?
Well, I hunts me up a bunch of hombres and gets myself into a poker game.
You take our $25,000 reward money and lose the works.
Well, what you mean I lose the works?
Well, you did, didn't you?
Well, I got it back, didn't I?
Yeah. You lost the money in a poker game, and then what do? You throw a gun on the game and take it back again.
Well, of course I took it back when I found out the game was crooked.
And how did you know it was crooked?
Oh, that's just plain silly.
I still want to know how you knew it was crooked.
Because when Doc Long loses 25,000 smackers in a poker game, it's got to be crooked.
That's no reason.
Well, it's reason enough for me.
So we're now not only wanted by the police as witnesses in the Martin case, but you're wanted for robbery with a gun. By the way, where'd you get the gun?
Oh, well, one I picked up around the Martin house.
Where is it now?
I made a present of it to the Chinese who runs a laundry around the corner from where we used to live.
Oh, but Doc, if the police ever find it on him, he'll be in an awful mess.
Well, that's what he gets for shrinking my underdrawers.
Transcribed adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you tomorrow at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York. Frank McCarthy speaking.